Egyptian National Championship, as well as the 2013 Production National Championship.
See, long time ago. That's like 10 years.
Yeah. So it'll be 11 years since he has won it. He won in 2004. He won Open Nats.
See, then that will become a very interesting thing to see. Nils, Eric, and JJ.
Christian,
yeah. See, we're not talking about Max Michel anymore.
Jacob, no. But I mean, there are some. This is where, and this is what I think drew Eric to come over was, I mean, you have Mason, you still have Max, you have JJ, you have Christian, you have Nils, you have Aaron Eddins, you have anybody who is anybody in the practical shooting world shoots that national championship. So why wouldn't you, if you're Eric Griffel and you can do it, why wouldn't you come over and say, hey, I'll compete against everybody. It'll be like a mini world shoot with every single top U.S. shooter and Eric Griffel and his son, Robin.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how that match going to end, because I don't know, because it's hard to tell right now. Sometimes if you, because they are so close, if you miss one stage, that basically caused an entire match. It's almost like that.
Yeah.
Almost like that. If Nils is not focused 100%, someone is going to become on the podium instead of Nils. It's going to be like that.
Right. Now, Christian won it last year pretty handily. But Christian and Eric have never shot in the same match against each other at this level. So I'm curious if that plays into Christian. How is Christian going to handle? Is he going to maintain his normal mental peak of performance, or is any stress at all from Eric being there and being competitive going to change anything in that regard?
It's a lot, especially they still need to be on in front of TV every single stage and saying, because Shooting USA is going to interview everybody and say, how did you shoot? Well, you're ready. Okay, Nick, you're up. It's going to be like adding on another pressure on not focusing just shooting. You have to deal with that kind of stuff as well, because that's what I heard. I have a local shooter. He shot 2023 Carry Optic National. And on the side match with the build drill, he said Christian is in front of him. But usually you on the side match, it's basically 2 minutes. Is you going in, make ready, pew, 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 and then another second time, pew, 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 and you're done. Basically 2-3 minutes, you're done, and next person. But because Christian was there, so Shooting USA was there, so hey, are you what do you think? Are you getting all alphas and whatnot? But I'm not going to say the score, but adding on that pressure, it does not make a person function 100% correctly. So I'll just leave it there. Everybody can imagine what happened, because it does make up to the final cut, but without the score. I'm just saying.
Right.
Yeah, and then the guy behind him is like, I'm waiting for 30 minutes to make my turn. Yeah, because everybody is like, okay, Christian, make this position. Let me take a picture real quick. And then, yeah, they just do that. So the entire time, it's just for video. I didn't say it's bad. I'm just saying like at that momentum and the mentality, you don't function correctly, because that's how people is. Once they make ready, they're in that zone. But if there's so many things going on, normal person won't able to handle that kind of stuff. So that's why I'm saying, like, it might be a very interesting thing to see how Eric and how Christian and other top shooters battle in that match, because that's going to be a big news for the shooting world, and then media's want to cover it, and media's want to interview these people, and it's going to be very interesting.
It is. And, you know, JJ, Nils, Max, they've been doing this for a couple of decades now. Mm-hmm. So they're accustomed to it.
Yep.
Christian reached his peak in what, 2019, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So since then he's been shooting at that extremely high level of proficiency. But again, this is going to be the first time shooting against someone of the likes of Eric Groffel.
Mm-hmm.
I think Christian has all the confidence he needs in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
He's competed against these guys for years, so he knows what he can do. He knows what he needs to do to win, but he's never competed against Eric Groffel at this level.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it may or may not test his ability to shoot like Christian normal, or does anything creep in there and Christian start going, okay, I need to do this instead of this. And does it change anything in his performance? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love the test is what I'm saying.
I love the test as well. And that's what I'm saying. Like, again, adding on that is where you have to have your mentality be ready. You have to train your mentality to say, okay, that person doesn't mean anything to me right now. And funny thing on this is something I can share on what JJ told us. He said I forgot what year. One of the year JJ reached a peak, and he knows, and everybody knows JJ is going to be the next world champion. And then that year, and his dad was there as well. JJ saying like, oh, I was going to shoot this world shoe or whatnot or national champion. I forgot what match. But again, he met the person that he know, well known, idoling at that person, which is Rob Lathan. So he met Rob Lathan. I'm pretty sure Rob Lathan know JJ is going to be a next star. So Rob Lathan did this trick to him. He just like shook his hand and say, good luck, JJ. It's going to be you. And then JJ, it just like, the entire time, and then his dad behind him is just like, no, you're not going to be champion this year. And he's like, what? I got all the training, I got everything, I'm nailed down, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get. And turns out Rob Lathan is still a world champion, just shy. JJ was just shy behind Rob Lathan,
just so, put enough in his head.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying, it's going to be interesting to see how carry up in national this year, just because everybody know Groffel is the god of shooting. Everybody know he is there. And Max Michelle, same thing with Max Michelle, was there, is there, and everybody was still looking up to them. JJ, same thing. So if you meet somebody that you've been like known or being known, like idling for, yeah, you probably will not function well. It's the same thing sometimes. Every time I talk to Nils, I'm always like, oh. So sometimes I won't function well. Even Nils behind me, like taking videos. So I still make mistake. Even it just Nils. We're teammates. We'll be fine. But it turns out because it's Nils, he's the master. He's the grandmaster. I'm always like, I want to be like Nils in the future. So I always like functioning really badly in front of him. So every picture that he took is like, Frank. So he always like, why you make this mistake, that kind of stuff. I'm just like, yeah, that's the normal person feeling. Again, you have to train yourself to become that mentality if you're able to handle that stress situation.
Right. You just have to stay in your game and not let any outside influences affect you.
Exactly.
And this will be the first time he's shot against somebody that could possibly intrude upon his thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is literally like a miniature world shoot right here.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see that played out. But again, I'm not shooting carry up in national anymore. Not anymore. Until they said, oh, okay, because the production optic is approved in IPSC, fine, we'll approve that in carry optic. Then I can shoot carry optic. Otherwise, it will be a different platform to shoot carry optic next time.
So are you saying that if you take the magwell off of your limited optics gun, that the grip pieces won't stay on? Can you? They won't.
That's why I have a masking tape.
I gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. So maybe that can be an option for them to work on that would then allow it to be in carry optics. You know what I mean?
Well, technically, the reason why they not approve the carry optic part is because the internal hammer. So they approve in production optic, but in carry optic, they consider that is not as a modified striker. They consider that's an internal hammer because the hammer is it's inverted. So when you pull the trigger that pushes the sear up, the sear will release that safety, and then that hammer will just swing down from the top.
Okay.
Yeah. So again, this is I already put the gun back, but I feel like this is really, really good portion to kind of show everybody why it's good for limited optic, but not for IDPA. So again, I'll just take down this, take it out. Okay. This is the top piece.
Okay.
So there's the sear is going to hit this safety right here. That's a safety. So once you hit that safety, this hammer drops. So that's the hammer. So that's where that's
the indicator. Okay.
Yeah. So that hammer also act like the indicator. So once it cocked, that little pin comes out. That's the indicator. So striker indicator. But the spring and the sear, once you hit the sear, this one goes down. Just like that. So that's a hammer. Goes down. Striking the little firing pin right here.
So that's gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So from the inside, it looks like an AR-15 as well. So
right.
Yeah. So that's what the entire function where it's just striking down from. So because USPSA consider that's an internal hammer. So it's a single stage gun. So you're not able to shoot carry optical production. But that's why they also create this division, limited optic division. So say, you know what, for those people who want to shoot 2011s or shoot this single stage triggers, go to that division. So that's how they deflect that into the limited optic division.
Yeah, I'm tracking. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they decide on for limited optics versus carry optics. If they separate carry optics into production optics, or they just say, what the heck, we'll just combine the two anyway, who cares? Just take out the thumb rest and the magwell, who knows?
Yeah. In the future, that we'll let those people to figure it out. To me, I don't like to get into the politics part, but you know, I'm just want to be a shooter. As long as I can shoot my gun, I can still shoot. Nobody takes my gun away, I'm happy. that's basically the minimum of Frank. I don't care what you guys do. As long as I can still shoot, I can still reload, I can still do everything I'm currently doing, I'm okay. If you take my guns away, then that there's a problem right there. So the stupid pistol brace thing that makes me a little bit like, but again, it's politics. Everything is good.
Well, and that's what I was about to say. That's more national politics than it is USPSA politics. You know?
Same thing with the USPSA policy. It's a national policy. It's all those people are trying to figure it out. Not me. Are they going to listen to me? No, they're not. Then are they going to listen to all your area directors? You never know. It's always like, okay, are you going to be transparency or not? I don't know. So what does that affect me as a shooter? I can still shoot. All the stuff you adult do your stuff, but as long as don't take my rights away, I'm okay. That's kind of the feeling I have with all the shenanigans going on with USPSA as well. I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to be a shooter. I don't necessarily need to go in super detail. I know somebody care, but to me, as long as you don't touch my gun, you don't change any weird rules, I'm okay.
Okay. So are you saying that none of what's going on within USPSA bothers you?
I tend not to look into those. I tend it not to. I hear things here and there, but, and again, I'm just like, well, the organization is still need to go on. Yeah, there's people, right? If there's people, there's chaotic. That's just me thinking about this. Doesn't matter if it's people running an organization or people running the religion part. Is there people? Nothing is perfect. That's the lightest way I can say about this.
Okay. I get it. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just staring myself the entire time. I'm just like, you become the logo. So I think I'm on a different page.
Yeah, let me, I'll bring us back here. There we go. I switched that screen. So when I do go and edit for YouTube, I'll make you bigger. If you're already bigger and I make you bigger, it'll be nice and clear. So
yes,
we can isolate it even more.
Yes.
Was there any other changes with your gear that you had to make when you switched systems?
Oh, you know what? Well, besides, because I'm running a race holster, Double Alpha makes a really, really good race holster. So they do have an insert for the Alien. That's the only thing I changed. The rest of it is just the since Double Alpha have a great system, so I'm still running the Double Alpha pouches, but just changing a little bit on the shim on the spacer to fit the Alien. The Alien, it's almost like the CZ-75 mag, but not really. It's more like a CZP. What's that gun with the 40 caliber? SP? What is that? No, not SP.
You're polymer. Asking the wrong guy.
Yeah, it's a polymer CZ. So it's not necessarily like a CZ, but it is square in the front. So I forgot. Anybody might know it's a CZ gun with the polymer frame, but it's a 40 caliber. That's almost like the same P10. I think it's P10 or P8, whatever. Doesn't matter. So that's the only shim I changed a little bit. And then the reloading style, I have to change a little bit again. This is something probably good to take on this gun is the grip feels like a 2011, but when you reload, it still have an angle in there. So it's not straight. It still have a little angle. I don't know if you can kind of see that.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the part I need to practice a little bit. Otherwise, yeah, it feels the same. So if I try to reload like straight like this, and that will be a little bit issue. So I need to kind of change the grip a little bit so this is straight. But the gun reloads like this.
Gotcha.
Just a little bit of angle right there. Yeah. But other than that, everything is the same. Holster is the same. Well, jersey is different. hat is different, of course. But the rest of... Oh, the bullets is different now because I'm shooting... I have to shoot full metal jacket. And I'm shooting in clothes. Bottom, so that's technically it's a hollow point. So I'm shooting hollow point 124. I'm reloading my rounds right now. I'm going to take it to a range this afternoon and chrono and see if I like the load. Other than that, it's just a minor thing. You change the gun, you change the platform. Some of the little stuff needs to change, but the rest of it is there.
Okay, so why hollow points? Why not just a full metal jacket?
Full metal jacket tend to have a... So let me reverse this. So why hollow point? Because hollow point has the enclosed bottom on the jacket bullet.
Okay.
But normal full metal jacket does not. It's just going to be jacketed and then it's an open base. So open base still have a lead that might goes in. So I'm just trying to eliminate as much foul as possible so I don't get malfunction. But people told me, as long as you have a Full Metal Jacket, you're good. Even though it's not enclosed based, but you can still shoot those. But it's easier to shoot. It's easier to clean. Sorry, easier to clean if it's an enclosure base.
Isn't there a pretty significant cost increase from a round nose or Full Metal Jacket to a hollow point?
Sorry, you might need to say the question again. I kind of missed out.
I feel like the hollow point would cost much more. I say much more, but I mean the cost is more for a hollow point than a round nose.
Yes.
Or Full Metal Jacket. Okay.
Yes, it is. But I'm still, that's why I'm saying I'm still trying out, develop. I'm not married to any brand or any projectile. I will still want to shoot as cheap as possible. So maybe a round will be better, but that's what people are saying, because the round one, the base is not closed, but the hollow point, it's closed. So the cleaning wise, it's easier to clean because they might have my lead going in and whatnot. But again, like I said, I'm just testing out.
Okay. Now, I don't know when they came out with the limited optics version, but how is, so a lot of people like to carry extra striker pins and other, you know, striker firing pins and springs and stuff like that. Is there a supply chain of parts that if someone were to get this, they could carry the extra parts with them to matches?
Yeah. And this is why I like Loggo Arms is because they have everything that you need. If you need magazines, if you need, I think, I don't want to say just Loggo Arms. I feel like the industry is shifting to, I'm the person supplying this gun. I supposed to have these extra parts ready on my website as well. So not just Loggo Arms. I'm pretty sure the industry are doing that right now. So if anybody know, like SIG is doing it, Canik is doing it. So if you go to Loggo Arms USA website, they have a place to give you these extra parts, extra pins, extra slide stop spring, extra magazine spring, extra firing pin, extra kit, extra piston, extra anything. So they have everything that's needed. And then if it's under the warranty, and if it's a normal wear and tear, usually you talk to their customer service, they reply really fast and should give you a really good take care of everything.
All right, I'm going to share my screen again just so you can see. There we go. And this is what you're talking about right here.
Yeah.
Under the store, you come down to parts and accessories.
Uh-huh.
Then you have magazine, sight, optics, top rails, replacement parts, and accessories.
Yeah, even if you just go to accessories, and it should give you, basically everything that you need.
Oh, look, there's your recoil assembly with your piston.
Mm-hmm. And they have extra, I think that's include three firing pins inside. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Extractor as well. So everything, if you just want a single parts, they have every single parts that you need.
There you go. Oh, look, you even have the piston scraper.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Those were all the questions that I had pertaining to Loggo. I mean, this is really my first opportunity to talk to you about it. So I had a lot of questions. So those were all from me. But now I have a different question. And that is, have you had a chance to look at the Ace virtual reality system?
Yes, I did. In fact, this year I was at SHOT Show because Shield Sight, I'm sponsored by Shield Sight as well. So the Ace does have a booth over there with Shield Sights. So they're basically use that platform to kind of promote each other's products so people can use the Oculus system to use Shield Sight in the virtual reality inside. So yeah, I did. And it is, it's a ton of fun. It feels really, really realistic. I love that as a training tool. I feel like if they come out during COVID time, it's going to be even better because everybody's stuck at home. So that's the part I love, is if they come out slightly a little bit, like a couple years early, everybody's on board. But nowadays, it's post-COVID. The industry is still shifting. It's not settled down like before. So any innovative part, it's good. But I don't know how long will that going to be in the industry. It's a very innovative, cool invention. If it come out, for me, my feedback is if it come out slightly earlier, it's going to be great. But man, that looks realistic. To be honest, I was sweating when I was playing with it. I was holding like a real gun when I was playing with it.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It was. I got to play with it at Prairie Fire just before SHOT Show. So it was fun. It's very good. I was very impressed with it. Mm-hmm. I think for virtual reality, it's probably one of the best things I've seen going.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's going to be a great way to train new shooter. If they don't like it, don't like the gun. It is a good way to train young generations because they always like getting into these technology stuff before they actually physically handling the gun. So yeah, it is a good way to do that. And then for JJ, it's a great way as well because he loves competition. He loves doing this kind of stuff. If you are playing with the bicycle company, what's that called? The Patreon? I forgot. If you're playing with that and if you see his name, he wants to play competition with you. He always wants his name to be on the top. That's just how JJ is. So, yeah, it is a great way to kind of shoot with each other. So if you have a set, I have a set. We can even talk during the match inside. I was like, hey, let's do a match. So it is a cool way to kind of do dry fire practice or dry fire practice with other people have Oculus set. So very, very good design.
Yeah, and I think this is it's one of those situations where, Frank, this is right up your alley. I was about to say, because I've been using Tim Herron as an example, but I'm going to switch that in this case. I'm going to use you as the example. You and the Taiwanese IDPA team want to do some practice. What better way than them have a virtual reality system where they can train in that system with you in there as well, being able to see what they're doing and kind of coach them up? You're thousands of miles apart,
mm-hmm.
but yet being able to train together.
Yeah. Yeah. I never seen that function, to be honest. I don't know, but I just see how they can talk to each other during a match, but I don't know if I can become the third person behind it, seeing how they shoot. That's the part I didn't ask, but it will be great if they have that functionality, which is going to change. Oh, they do.
They do. Yes.
Ooh.
I did a whole hour with Tim Herron and Noah Senta. And yes, that was one of the things we talked about. So if you're a firearms trainer, instructor, whatever you want to call yourself, whether you're a Tom Castro or a Tim Herron or a Mike Seeklander or Mason Lane, you know, pick one, then this is a way to expand your business and work with people remotely from across the country. Maybe even, you know, maybe someone came to your class. They're a D class shooter when they come through. They're a B class shooter when they get done. So there's still more work to be done. Well, here's a way to continue maybe a subscription service with someone who's still wanting to get better, wanting to improve. Here's that chance, you know, once a week, once every other week, once a month, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You get online with these guys and work with them to make them better. Say, oh, this is where you've regressed in your training. This is what you need to do in dry fire or virtual or live, whatever, in order to improve, you know?
Yeah, I think that's also a good way for people to pre-practice before they come to the class. They can use that as a practice session or an instructor going in and see, evaluate first and see how this shooter is doing. So when they come to the class, it will shorten an hour and then get more effective training and that kind of stuff. So 100% agree. Oh, I never thought about that. Oh, now I might look into it more.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I got to give a shout out to Andreas Yankopoulos. I recorded an episode with him. It hasn't been released yet because I put out a whole bunch of episodes on stuff going on within the USPSA, but he did bring up one shortcoming, which I had not considered. And it took a couple of DMs back and forth for me to finally understand what he was getting at. The one thing, I'm going to have to reach out to Noah. The one thing he pointed out, which was not realistic, was your picture, your sight picture, remains the same regardless if the target's 5 yards away virtually or 50 yards away virtually. Meaning, if you're shooting irons, then certain things should be out of focus.
I see.
And so the depth perception type of a thing isn't there. So there might be a way. I think the guy's name is Eric who invented it. A Chinese gentleman, actually.
The Asian guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There might be a way for them to add that in. That would be much more complicated, but there's probably a mathematical formula in there somewhere where you could do it.
But at the same time, right now, if we look at the market, every single gun or every single shooter, if we still look at the Carry Optics National or Carry Optics Division as a USPSA, it's still most popular division. So basically everybody, and I don't say everybody, like probably like 60% 70% of the people are shooting a gun with the optic on.
Yep.
Yeah. So
it's actually,
it's realistic.
It depends on how you want to look at it, because I've been running these statistics. So I don't use local matches because there are so many of them. Mm-hmm. And people like to experiment at local matches, so they could bring anything that day. But nobody goes to a level 2 or higher and experiments. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're paying too much money to go there and experiment with something. So when I look at that data from January 1 to the end of May, 57% of all shooters are either carry optics or limited optics. 57%. Now, when you add in open and PCC, 85% of all shooters in USPSA have a dot on their gun.
So I am 5%. Almost correct. You say 57%. I say 60-70% of our shooter are using carry optic. But then, yeah, I forgot I should count the open and limited optic as well. So almost the same thing. Basically, 80% of the people have dots on their guns. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, when you add in carry optics, limited optics, open, and PCC, 85%. That's 85% of your shooters right there.
Wow.
Yeah. Limited has dropped significantly. Production, revolver, and single stack, those four are only 15% of all shooters.
Wow.
At a level two match.
What a change. Not even a decade. I remember limited was the largest division, and carry optic was just started 2017, which just barely started. Wow.
Well, and I want to say it was like 2018 when I went back and looked, production might have been the biggest division in all of USPSA. Mm-hmm. 6 years later, it's at 5%.
It's almost like revolver. It's gone.
Yeah, it's dropped significantly. So crazy.
Yeah. And then I think that's also because the technology is improved on red dots, and on all the guns are almost like standard having a dot on the place causing, I don't want to say causing, but affect these kind of statistics. It's because, well, I have a gun, I have a place to put the dot. Why not put the dot on? And it turns out you completely change to a different division. And I'm like, well, I shoot dot more comfortable than iron sight. Why should I come shoot iron sight?
Well, and since 2018, how many red dot sight companies are out there now? There's 100 of them.
Yeah, there's a lot. Because before
Lago will ship a gun to you with their own red dot optic on it.
Technically, it's RTS, but yeah.
Right, but it says Lago Arms on it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So anybody can have a red dot with their name on it and ship it to you. So, I mean, there's there's dozens of companies that will sell you a red dot now.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So that's why I'm like, wow, that technology does improve and everything is shifting. So you never know what the next 10 years look like, Dave. You never know. What if Ironsight back to the king again? Because it's just like the polymer thing. Like everybody wants to go back to polymer. Everybody wants to shoot polymer because it's light, it's easy to transition. But not everybody wants to shoot steel gun again. It's always like this
because of the recoil impulse. Yeah.
Yeah. So who
now? Everybody's going to want a logo, an alien.
Yes.
That's not a cheap gun, though.
Not a cheap gun, but hey, Atlas is not the cheap gun.
Nope. You're absolutely right. If you're buying
a cheap gun, they're still selling.
Yep. So absolutely. Staccato is definitely not cheap. So there's a lot of not cheap guns out there. And by cheap, I don't mean quality. I mean price.
Yeah.
So that's why people,
this is an online debate. People say, well, why I want to get the Alien if I can shoot a 2011? Like there's more parts on there, blah, 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 and those kinds of stuff. But then I never get into that debate, but I always are thinking, it's like, it's the same thing that nobody wants to shoot Canik because it was so cheap. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Everybody's like, what Canik? That's a cheap gun, just like Taurus. Nobody wants to shoot that gun. And turns out you never know. And then not even, almost 10 years. But when they first introduced the SFX back in 2017, hey, not in 5 years, 6 years, everybody wants Canik. So it's become like that. It's like, why you don't want Canik? Because it's Turkish gun? Is it because it's cheap? And now you want Canik because somebody just win an award, so everybody want that gun. Same thing with 6 hour. No, everybody was like P320 until Max Michel won something. Everybody shoot P320. It's the same thing.
It's funny. Back in the day, the saying was for cars, whatever wins on Sunday sells on Monday. So NASCAR, if Chevy won on Sunday, Monday, everybody's buying a Chevy. If it was Ford, everybody's buying Ford on Monday. It's no different now in the shooting community where Nils wins 4 nationals with a Canik. Oh, time to go buy a Canik. I guess they're good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or like you said, Max with a 320. Now,
Beretta.
Beretta. There you go. Staccato's getting out there in the limited optics game. Oh, want to get a Staccato. Ben Steger just got a Staccato.
Yeah. But then again, it's all about this because now people, because I don't want to say people perspective is bad or something, but because again, Alien just landed here in America. They really want to push into the competition. So of course, people are saying, oh, we're just going to wait and see if somebody wins national. But at the same time, is that the time to invest the gun, or you should invest the gun earlier so when it goes big, then the price, you still keep the price of where you bought it, because this might not be the gun 3 years, 4 years later, somebody win a national. I don't want to say me, maybe I will, right? And then people say, whoa, this gun can outshoot open guns. He's shooting an open minor, and then he's shooting open and minor game, and then he won national. Oh, this is the gun we want to invest. At that time, the company will be like, oh, okay, because we win, we have some things, so we can bump up the price a little bit more. So people was like, oh, okay. So it's like that, you know? It's like what the stock. When you're going to invest this particular stock, is it lower or is it higher? So same thing with the gun.
And that's why I was asking earlier about sponsorship, you know, sponsoring matches, sponsoring shooters, that type of thing, you know, because that's really how you get your name out there.
Mm-hmm. They are sponsoring some matches. They're looking into some certain sponsorship on matches, and of course they're looking for somebody that can travel more to represent Lago even more. Because right now it's just Michael and several. And again, I don't want to say people are serious or not. Some people are affiliate, to Lago, including me, our affiliate. But how serious are they shooting in this platform? You never know. So they might shoot different platform weekdays and they shoot this certain days, or you're full time shooting this particular gun and whatnot. So that the time will tell. And then people are, the company is looking for sure. And then they're looking for a sponsorship to see if there is a place for them to sit at the booth and have more people to come over and check out the guns and whatnot. So there's a program for that.
Well, and I think, look, I think people could look at Canik as a very good business model in that, what did they do? They got a high level shooter. They brought them on as basically an employee. And now, you know, they've included them in the design and the testing and other stuff. The United States is the biggest firearms market in the world. It would behoove any company who's up and coming and has the capital to do it to invest that money into somebody who can fulfill a role similar to that and have them be the spokesperson, their main shooter, whatever you want to call it, and have them do all of the sponsoring stuff. I mean, look, Nils is still going around. He was just shooting a Canik with a suppressor on it, mm-hmm. at a show recently. You know, yeah. If you've got somebody on board that can do that, and I'm going to just, for sake of argument, for sake of my discussion, I'll use you. They bring you on full time as that Nils person. Now you can go to the South Carolina sectional as an employee, run that demo bay, explain to people as a shooter what the benefits are, what they're not. You can have a person-to-person conversation with Tom Castro, you know, competitor-to-competitor conversation, and talk about these intricacies and all of this stuff. I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah. I 100% agree. So Michael is in Czech Republic. It's basically their employee over there. So, but again, that's Czech Republic. If they have somebody right here in the U.S., it will become a significant big hit, because just we have this podcast, we just talk almost 2 hours. That this gun is great. Again, if we can versatile a little bit for some of the American shooters, just like you talked about, one screws can take down. That's a good thing, but it's a double-edged sword. But probably some of the people say, oh, that takes out that part. I don't know. So, right? It's the same thing. But even though they say we have a modular part, we can put it on, which is great. But again, if we have more people or more company, doesn't have to be Lago, doesn't have to be Canik. If we have more company in this industry is willing to listen to the consumer side, it's going to be a big, big win. Not just trying to get a contract here and there, but if you listen to the consumer, that's where the market's from, because we are the one paying the money to buy products. We are the one driving this industry to move forward. So if you had come up with these particular guns here and there, or some of the design that you like, you test out, you can tell from the sales that the number doesn't look right. What did we do wrong? Did we not listen to the consumer, what they don't want? Same thing with Lago. When they first come out with this gun, people don't like the grip. They like the vertical grip. They come out with the vertical grip. No, we want to get into the competition market. So there you go. They put the gas pedal on to make it even more competitive in that area. So see, just like Lago as a good example as well, they listen to consumer. Same thing with Canik, they listen to the consumer. If we have more company listening to consumer, yeah, it's going to make the company success. It's going to make the customer happy, and everybody's happy.
Absolutely. And yeah, happy means people are buying.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that is what I take. That is one of the reasons why I agree with Lago. And that's because they're expensive. It's because they have that mindset. They want to get into competition. They really want to invest the U.S. market. They really want to see how the consumer's feedback on on this platform versus to other platforms, because everybody here in the US are shooting the traditional Browning system, the Telting barrel system, the every system that we've been shooting for years and years. But this type of system, when is the last time we see the gassed piston delay system? It's HKP7 during Cold War. That's how long this gun, this type of operating system have been. So in order to put that in a modern gun and also put that in a competitive situation, this company is bold. That's one of the reasons why I onboard this company. It's like they listen to the consumer. They're innovated and great people. Great people.
Yeah. Have you done any accuracy shooting with it to see how accurate the gun is?
Oh, yeah. When I zeroed the red dot, that's where I tested accuracy. If I let's put it this way, 5 rounds, 25 yards, usually people will try to get as close at that, whatever their black dot or sticker is, right? This gun is shooting the sticker every single time. So once the dot is zeroed, this gun is like I think it's about 2-inch spread on 25 yards. About. This is still not on the very stable bag. It's just me just trying to like, can I see the dot? Because I'm shooting 8 MOA. So basically the dot is covered the entire dot, the entire black sticker. I'm like, is that the right one? Okay, pull the trigger. Once I pull the trigger and I pull the target back, yeah, it's about 2-inch, 1-inch spread, to be honest. It's deadly accurate. It's crazy.
Okay. And I would expect that with a piston-driven system with the barrels not moving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And another thing I want to talk about, since that brings back on the first time I shoot this gun, is, you know, when we shoot the traditional guns, traditional modern handguns, when we zero 18 yards, even you pull 25 yards away, the dots might be go low. Like you still need to aim a little bit higher to shoot low or something. Do you kind of tend to remember that? It's like okay, it's accurate enough. It's accurate. So even though if I try to put the distance, some of the accuracy, you're like, okay, I get it. I need to aim a little bit higher, or maybe grip the gun, or maybe not move the trigger to tend to go to the left or go to the right. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Okay. Yep. I know you're
talking about. And when you shoot an AR-15, we shoot an M16 in the long distance, even though you zeroed in the indoor range, you know you have to hold, and you shoot 100 yards, and that's where you can tell, oh, this gun is not 100% zero, or this gun is not accurate, that kind of stuff, because it's so accurate on the precision rifle, and then you will tell, okay, this gun is not where zero I want, that kind of stuff. And this Alien, it's almost like that. When I zero at 20 yards, this is just me, when I shoot 20 yards, and then according to the projectile, it's supposed to be after 20 yards going high a little bit, right? That's where people are saying if it's under 18, everything should be fine, but after 20 yards, it's going high a little bit. So when I zeroed it at 20 is dead on, but once 21, 22 yards and start going high, and I'm like, is it me not shooting well, or is it the gun? And turns out, yeah, it's the gun. It's almost like an AR-15. You have that bullet trajectory. It's you going up and you going down. When it's further down and you become zeroed again, it's almost like this gun as well. 9mm, not supposed to do that, but I experienced it. It's like when you zero in 10 yards, it's going to be great in 10 yards. But once you go further away, oh, okay, that dot is right there, but the bullet, it's on the top. You'd be like, that isn't right. So that's what I'm saying. It's like it's precision enough that accuracy or your fundamental does matter when you shoot this gun, because it's too accurate. So if you just move a little bit, it will cause you Delta or Charlie, basically. It's too accurate. But if you shoot the traditional guns, you have a leeway because, you know, sometimes you have to, you might dip the gun, you might move the gun around, but it's still in that realm. But if you're using this with a tight corner or with a tight maybe credit card box on the head box, you will see the difference if you're not holding it correctly. So it does give you, it does polarize a little bit what your fundamental is, to be honest. It will just basically showing, oh, okay, you grip it wrong. You grip it traditional way, because that also confirms with several shooters I have with local people. They say, yeah, I do have to hold it like an open gun. If I don't hold it like an open gun, it's going to be everywhere, because traditional guns, there's a leeway, but this gun doesn't really give you a leeway on that. Hopefully that makes sense. I'm sorry, I'm just like mumbling here and there. Does that make sense, Dave? You have to shoot, if you shoot accurate. Yeah,
kind of. So it really highlights whatever mistakes you're making in your grip.
Yes.
The trajectory part, what that tells me is when you're zeroing at 20, the bullet is still rising. Mm-hmm. So for people to understand, when you're talking an AR, there it crosses your line of sight twice. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's say you're going to engage a target at 250 yards. That's the second time that bullet is coming into your line of sight. The first time, I'm just going to throw out a random number, okay? The first time it's going up and it intersects your line of sight, we'll say at 27 yards, and then at 250 yards, it's coming back down and it's intersecting again. So it sounds to me like with the Logo, that bullet is still rising at 20 yards, maybe just a little bit, mm-hmm. but it's still rising. So at some point, we'll say 40, 45 yards, it's going to be coming back down somewhere. At another point, it's going to be coming back down. I guess you just have to run your numbers mm-hmm. to figure out where in the world it's coming down, so you know exactly where it intersects again. But I imagine that little bit from 20 to say 40 yards, it should still be, for practical shooting purposes, point of aim, point of impact. Like I still should be able to, granted I'm gripping the gun right and doing everything else right.
Yeah.
A head box at, you know, 35 yards, I should still be able to aim center and hit the A zone. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it should be that, but.
Yes, for practical shooting, no problem. But when I zeroed the dot, and that's what I learned, it's like, oh, 9mm does that as well. To be honest, I never notice when I shoot a Canik or shoot a Glock or shoot a Walther. I never notice that because, again, like I said, because there's leeway on those tilting barrel, because that tilting barrel is moving. So
right.
maybe that's why. But this gun is a fixed barrel in the frame. And then when you zero the dot and you thought, okay, there's supposed to be a leeway, I might just point up a point of impact. But turns out, no, it gives you a little like half an inch rise. And you're like, what is going on? Yeah.
Well, when you determine your trajectory and where it impacts within, it's all based on line of sight mm-hmm. through your optic, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The greater the distance between that optic and that bore axis gives you that variances along the way. And because there's such a big difference, you probably need to do what the sweet spot for an open gun is about 22 to 23 yards. When you zero there, basically anywhere from 0 to 50 yards is just you aim where you want to shoot and pull the trigger, and it'll be within, you know, a half of an inch or so.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
that's probably what needs to happen with the Logo, is you've got to treat it like an open gun because of that gap between the center of the optic and the center of your bore. That mm-hmm. gap is bigger than most.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably where the issue is.
Yeah. And that's why I'm saying, like, on the traditional gun, I never seen that, but until I shot right. this, I realized there's a trajectory on the 9mm. I was like, it's not fast enough. It shouldn't go up. But again, like I said, that's my experience. So, Dave, I know you shoot long precision. You know what I'm talking about. So that's why
I do. Yeah.
Hopefully you understand it. And it turns out, yes, we both understand it. It just very, very interesting. So that's why I'm saying, like, this gun, you have to treat like you don't know anything. Because if you're trying to use all the knowledge that you know, gripping, everything, you have to just throw it away. You have to retrain yourself a little bit on this gun to make it, like, to make this beauty, all the stuff come out from this beautiful gun, all the benefit from this gun.
Okay. With 1,000 rounds of ammo through it and the dry fire time you've put into it, what's the percentage of being married to the gun? So if, let's say, when you left, when you became a Logo sponsored shooter,
mm-hmm.
if you were 100% with a Canik, where are you percentage wise with the Alien?
On the first shot, I'm 100% already. Cause that shot right away give you the smile when you have to turn back and like, oh my gosh, that is so soft. It's going to be like that. And then you are surprised it's 115 Sonic bullet on this soft. You're like, okay, I'm marrying to it. But that's only the wow factor. But for practical shooting, for getting into, I'm getting more and more serious. I think it's about second match in when I shoot this gun, which is where you see the almost GM runs on the classifier. That's my second match on this gun. And I'm like, oh, wow, this gun runs beautiful. Like, okay. And I know how to grip this gun. Okay. This gun does shoot super accurate than nobody else. And that's the time I'm like, okay, I'm married to this gun. Another wow that I'm almost getting into this. I'm like, okay, so backtrack a little bit. When I dry fire, I'm like, oh, I love this gun. When I shoot the match, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm married into this gun. Why I love this gun is because this is another thing where designer hit 100% for all the shooters. If we put all the rounds, so let's say 22 rounds on this magazine, right? We put 22 rounds and then we have one in the chamber. Usually what happens, you have to do this to shove it in, right? Because there is one round stuck in the chamber and then that does, and then the magazine design does need to have you squeeze into that gap. But because they designed this magazine super close to the top, so the magazine catches right there. So all the resistance that you have is this, even with the full mag, because the design, it's just like put it in and then whoop, once you pass that resistance and do the mag catch, and then everything just runs good. So that's during a dry fire, I know that I love this gun. And during the match make ready part, I noticed that as well. It's like, oh, wow, that is really, really soft to get into it. Just like that. Even in the full round, 22 round, one round in a chamber. That's it. That's the resistance that you have just past the mag catch. And everything, it just so buttery smooth. See, even though I'm trying to do this, it will fall off because it's so buttery smooth. Doing a reload. So second match, long answer short, second match, I 100% married to this gun.
Okay. So you consider yourself to be at 100% then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like it.
100%. Love this gun. So yeah, come on. I've been dry fire. I don't treat gun well, even though it's a fancy gun. See, I don't treat gun well. I've been dry firing crazy. Alrighty. So that's just me.
Gotcha.
Even though it's a 6,000 gun, even though it's a $700 gun, doesn't matter. I will just, gun is gun. I will just treat it. If you are treating like a tool in a competition, Yeah. Price doesn't really matter, but gun is a gun. And I told my wife this gun shoots like an open gun. And she's like, yes, that's good. You're supposed to run like an open gun. And she's like, she see the performance from me shooting Kennick versus me shooting Lago. She see the significant difference on not only trigger pull, but she said you feel more confidence shooting Lago than shooting Kennick. I was like, why is that? And she just say the way how you handling the gun, the way how you handling a stage. And I say, I feel like it's the same. And she said, but it feels on those videos, you feel like you are shooting more confidence when you shoot Lago. So that's why I know, okay, I am into this gun, not because somebody told me to marry into this gun. It's because the confidence I showed people with this gun. So
show that magwell again, Frank.
Oh yeah.
Now that I got you a bigger screen. Okay. Yep. You're putting, yeah, you're putting some wear and tear on that booger.
You know what? Another funny thing. I was practicing this and I smelled smoke coming out from this gun. I reload too fast because it's too dark part. It sparks. I'm like,
what?
That smells like fire. I'm like, what is going on? Because I do it really, really fast. So I'm like, whoa, okay.
I'm going to take a 2 hours and 7 minutes in. That's going to be the picture for this episode. You sniffing that thing.
Smell of freedom.
Oh, I love it. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Look at us. Look at us. This is a good time, you know?
Yeah. Frank, I'm excited for you, man. I'm not going to lie. So I'm happy for you. I'm glad to see you're back in shooting again. Everything's kind of settled down domestically for you so you can start back shooting. So I'm excited.
And I have a reloading room, so I finally have an area. I know it's still not pretty, but I have a reloading room now. Don't nice. don't mind the messiness on this because I'm still transitioning everything. So there you go. I have everything ready to get back to shooting. So that is why I'm like, I'm not quit shooting. Never. If I'm still moving, if I can still pull the trigger, I'm shooting. That's the commitment of me to this sport, to the Second Amendment. It's, as long as I'm moving, I'm going to shoot guns.
Nice. You're gonna teach your kids?
Oh, they are. When I shoot Kennick, remember the Kennick have that little tiny guns? Yeah. My kids already use that to dry fire with me.
Are we talking about the toolkit gun?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I teach them. They shove it into their diaper, not holster. They shove it into their diaper. So
oh goodness.
So everything they know.
So they're already doing appendix and pointing it at their junk.
Yes, exactly. And then I don't need to bend down to pick up a magazine anymore. My kids will do.
Oh, there you go.
For picking up the magazine. So I'm like, good for you guys.
Honey, we're going to have a couple more.
No, we're good. We're good. For me, I think it's good as well. Two is good. Two is great.
Two's a good number.
Yeah, two's a good number.
Well, Frank, I appreciate you coming on. It's been a blast. We have to do this a little bit more frequently. Every other year is not good enough.
Yeah, I know. We do a lot of talks. I know some of are just, you know, crappy. Not just you know, this because it's this casual podcast. It's a casual shooter podcast. So
exactly,
we can casually talk everything we want. But again, it's good to catch up with everybody, with you, and it's good to see more and more new blood, especially from me. I feel like it's the same thing. I haven't shot forever, so when I go to the local match, everybody knows me when they shoot with me, like those old guys, but we do have new bloods coming in, which is great. That's why I'm saying, like, yeah, the community is growing. USPSA is still growing. Second Amendment still growing. Get into Gen Z now. So that means it's good. We have new bloods coming in. People don't know me. I'm like, I'm happy. You don't know me. That's fine. And then when I'll shoot them, I'm like, whoa, who is this guy? And I'm like, I've been shooting. So yeah, it's good to see. It's good to go back to the community, come back to the podcast and whatnot. It's great. It's great to see everybody.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.